Oh, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, welcome to Hey Kids Comics. We are doing episode 28 tonight of the story arc. Damn it, Cole. You know what to do.
First, you sounded constipated coming in. And
I then... went for a real constipated Stan Lee thing, and I don't know if it worked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I actually thought I was listening to Rip Torn there for a second.
It's funny how that comes out that way.
Well, there we go. There, thank you for the big reveal there. It came from the license.
Right.
This is issue 28.
Yes, it is. Issue 28 brings us to this point. We are looking for, in this issue, movies, comic books that are based on movies and not vice versa. So
precisely. And in saying as much, we're also looking at comic books that weren't simply an adaptation. It is okay if they started out that way.
Right.
As you know, in the first episode of this arc, we talked about Star Wars. It started out as a film adaptation, and then it just went nuts.
So, and since we're talking about movies, we would be remiss if we did not include probably one of the best critics and most amazing podcasters that I've ever met in my life. Would you just let me compliment you, you ass? The man that they call the Australian Braille, because you feel him and he feels all down under.
That was actually my teenage years when I was covered in acne.
Is that what they call you in Sing Sing? Stuart Balk, ladies and gentlemen. One flew over the poo-poo's vest. Stuart Balk is with us tonight. If you haven't listened to Midnight Movie Cowboys, he's one of the now three, and congratulations on adding your third, bringing up baby, one of the three members of the Midnight Movie Cowboys, and the only one that actually speaks the Queen's English.
Exactly.
And as always...
You will notice as we go through the show that Stu actually, when he says words like neighbor or color, you can actually hear the U.
He didn't say neighbor.
The Americans have dropped.
Neighbor. And that, of course, is the always dulcet ringing tones of the Jedi, Cole Houston, who joins us amidst a whirlwind of activity getting ready for this year's AllCon. So thank you for that. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, I have to take a break from time to time. Otherwise, I'll go mad, and you know nobody wants that at AllCon.
Well, as
yeah,
they've said, the actual
absolutely
convention's
do.
Now renamed All Coal.
It's All Coal.
It's all
it is. ColCon Coal.
Getting to be that way sometimes when yeah. I'm in almost 10% of everything.
It works.
It's Andrew. It's like Andrew. It's like the Prestige where it's got 10,000 multiplied coals.
It's just a bunch of Hawaiian shirts in a field somewhere. All right. Speaking of the Prestige, let's talk about the prestige that comes from creating a comic book based on a movie. TV shows was easy. We talked about
After
that.
A few of those.
Star Wars
yeah.
was super
yeah,
there easy.
There seem to be more television shows. The licenses must be cheaper. I don't know.
But this one I've had a lot of trouble with. I have a lot of trouble in my research trying to figure out, you know, adaptations are easy because every movie has a comic book adaptation because it's just simple. It's so simple to do. But like Cole said, going beyond that basic adaptation or starting as an adaptation and finding traction is an extremely hard thing to do. So, Cole, why don't you get us started? And tell us about some of your favorites, and maybe it'll jog my memory into thinking of some that I don't have.
Okay. I think one that springs to mind that's rather obscure, because oddly enough, this is a property that didn't get much coverage, was the James Bond license.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize. Okay. Marvel actually did an adaptation of The Spy Who Loved Me, but that doesn't count because it was just like, oh, here's our comic book version of the movie. However, okay. I believe it was Dark Horse that published it was probably a one-shot, but it might have been a mini-series called 007 Serpent's Tooth.
Oh, yeah?
And it had, if memory serves, had Paul Gillacy art. So it was like, if you're a fan of Saber, it was like reliving some of that.
Nice.
And it really played almost like a James Bond movie. It was very clever, had a very over-the-top villain. It had a lot of the flavor of James Bond, so they did a great job at capturing that within the adaptation.
Very cool. I'm looking
and in
now.
In fact, in the research for this, speaking of spy things, apparently there was one comic company, I'm not exactly sure who, that did a Flint comic book.
Like Flint?
Yes, it was called Batman Flint, apparently.
It was called what?
That Man Flint.
Oh, I thought you said Batman Flint. I was like, that is the best idea I have ever
Batman
heard.
Batman Flint, I think, yes, would have been.
What you got, Stu? Stu just stopped.
It would be even better, actually, if it was Larry Flint is Batman.
Oh.
Come on.
Batman Flint.
So
it's like he's wearing a cowl and a diaper.
Right. So what? So what is?
You gotta take your clothes off. We're gonna make you do it.
I realize that that Stu might not be able to participate in this portion, but Cole, what is your favorite?
To me, the one that stands out as like the best use of the license ever was two licenses, actually, because they invented the combo and they invented the combination of these licenses that the very studio they were licensing from would go on to use. And that was Dark Horse's Aliens vs. Predator.
Yes, yes.
Because their Aliens vs. Predator miniseries, the very first one, was smartly written. It read like a damn movie. It should have been the movie.
And it ended up not being the movie, which was a shame.
It did not end up being the movie. What we got was something else entirely, which is rather weird because you have a situation where the comic company licenses the films. They make a comic that would make a great film, and then the filmmakers decide, hey, I like that idea, and let's do something entirely different and crappy.
And awful. Yeah, no, I agree. The thing they did
as our resident movie expert, what were your thoughts on Aliens versus Predator, Stu?
I didn't mind the first one. The second one was absolutely terrible.
Really? You didn't mind the first one?
I didn't mind it. It was all right. Compared to the second one. What was the second one? AVP Requiem?
Requiem.
Ugh, that was hard.
Requiem. The entire movie, half of the storyline based on losing your keys in a culvert.
Yeah.
I saw the adaptation. It was a combination of that property and Rod Serling's seminal masterpiece. It was Aliens versus Predator Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Oh, my God.
I saw the other one, actually, Alien versus Predator Requiem for a Dream, where it's got the alien and the predator.
It also was the best use of a Wayans brother in a movie.
Wow.
Movie comic book adaptation.
But seriously, though, Dark Horse for a long time had the Alien license, and they took that all over the place.
They did.
And then I think they got the Predator license. I think they had done some a Predator miniseries. And apparently, as the story goes, there were some folks at Comic-Con or something, some people from Dark Horse, sitting around, and they were, like, kicking back. I think it was almost just like versus, you know, who fighting who.
Right.
And somebody said, Aliens versus Predator. And it was like, we could actually do that.
We have the technology.
You know, we're not going to be able to do Joker versus Mask very easily, but we've already got the licenses, so...
Oh, God, do we need to talk about Mask? Was Mask a comic book? Mask was a comic book before, thank God.
Mask was a comic first, so we're going the wrong direction.
Thank God
that.
For that, because I really don't want to talk about that movie. My favorite of those, the Dark Horse... Because Dark Horse had the rights to Alien, they had the rights to Predator... and they used them both, and then they, like you said, they famously combined the two. Was my favorite from that was the Aliens Green Lantern comic book. Did you ever read that?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of cross company crossover as well.
Batman versus Alien. That was a real one.
Batman versus Predator was really good. Superman versus Aliens was kind of there.
Well, again, how can you do that? You can't have Superman fight anything because Superman wins. That's the rule,
yeah.
Right? I liked the Gary Busey. No, I liked the 2001 was my favorite Marvel adaptation.
Yes, 2001's a really interesting thing because it was an unusual choice for one thing.
Well,
to take that and go somewhere with it.
Well, you don't often get a lot of Stanley Kubrick comic books.
Especially
that's
ones that
Barry Lyndon was the only other one I could think of.
You know, I say that like I'm joking about it, but I guarantee if we went and looked for them, they would be there.
There probably was.
I'm going to do a little real quick research into Stanley
Kubrick. What was your favorite Kubrick comic?
The Shining.
Lolita.
Lolita.
Now that one you probably could find.
Right, right.
In a brown paper bag somewhere under a counter, probably.
But the reason I like
the best part about Lolita in comic book form for Andrew, he'd get to see Shelley Winters on every page.
Oh. I think I threw up in my mouth just now. I thought we, you know what? I think that honestly, and this isn't a joke like we make about you know on USG where we're like the first reference of blah 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 blah. I think this was literally the first reference to Shelley Winters that has been on Hey Kids Comics, and
that is true, which is rather remarkable.
I actually thought there might have been an embargo on that sort of thing, but I just thought I'd chance my arm and see how I went.
Well, we're going to let it in because in this case, technically, it's an import.
It's true. Okay, that's no true. Worries. We won't say anything about it. But 2001, the comic book was 76. It had the introduction of one of my favorite comic book characters in the Marvel Universe that still exists today.
Yes, indeed.
One of the most prolific of anything to come out of an adaptation and continue to exist, short of one we'll talk about probably next week. And this was the Machine Man.
Yes, indeed. That was an interesting thing. I was last year preparing for AllCon. I was coming up with some trivia, and I got curious about Machine Man. I didn't realize that he originated in...
Yeah.
2001.
It's a really weird comic because it started out as an adaptation, like you were saying. It started out as a Treasury Edition adaptation, and then it went into a monthly series. Oh, and so it covered a lot of ground with that, with Weird Machine Man and the Monolith, and how many issues were there? Let's see.
It ran a good long time, it surprisingly longer than you'd think.
It ran about a year, and... And it had the obelisk and the whole nine yards in it, in the monthly series. It wasn't even part of the – and they kind of go into depth with that, and they kind of go into depth with the Star Child as well.
The Star Child really? With the big bald head.
That's right. So that's my – so that's my that was my favorite.
And that's an interesting choice too, because it does underscore a lot of what happened at Marvel, something I think we may have touched on a bit with television – certainly with the movies and the upcoming toy discussion we'll be having next week, is that Marvel had this really uncanny ability, no pun intended for you X-Men fans, to literally create these licensing agreements where they got to keep whatever they created.
They kept what they killed, yeah.
Yeah.
The Chronicles of Riddick'd that.
So they literally, another shining example of that in the movie adaptations was Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, the resemblance between the movie Godzilla and the comic Godzilla ends at the name. But, you know, he was a comic that ran for years.
Oh, yeah.
And it was based on a license from a film. And they plopped Godzilla square into the middle of the Marvel Universe. He fought the Avengers and the Fantastic Four. S.H.I.E.L.D. was chasing them all over the country.
We went over that. I forget when it was. When did we go over that? Because I literally have that entire run still here waiting to come to AllCon with me for you. And I'm holding it now in my grubby little paws again.
Yes, we did go over that a bit recently, so we won't touch on it too much. That was another example because you had a handful of characters that came out of that. A most pronounced, of course, being Red Ronin.
Right.
The giant samurai robot that apparently anyone can drive.
There's another...
Well, let me bring up a couple.
Yeah,
let me bring up a couple here. All right. RoboCop, I want to ask, was that ever turned into a comic book? I'm sure it must have been.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely it was. In fact, there was a RoboCop versus Terminator miniseries.
Okay.
Again, as Cole...
I figured that would have been one.
As Cole said famously, and I'm going to paraphrase even though he's here, he said, you know, the amazing thing about doing a comic book based on a movie or a comic book based on a TV show or any of that is you don't have a budget. So you can do whatever you want. So you could have a show that is, you know, you could have a comic book that is Terminator versus RoboCop versus Ash versus Freddy Krueger and just do it if you have the license for it. People will buy that.
Of course.
Yes.
You know, RoboCop. It was actually a comic
book. In fact, that brings up another one on the Warriors.
What's that?
Was the Evil Dead / Army of Darkness was adapted into a lot of series. I can't remember who the publisher was off the top of my head, but you know, they went nuts with the Evil Dead.
I want to say IDW, but I'm not sure about that, because IDW is the it became the new master of license buying up.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. What Dark Horse didn't already have, IDW took on. Ghostbusters was another IDW.
Ooh, it was a huge one. No, Evil Dead's Dark Horse. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing one that was an Evil Dead Shop Till You Drop was one of the...
Now, Evil Dead was... oh, my God. This gets a little convoluted. Dynamite. So Dark Horse had it, and it ends up in the hands of Dynamite at some point.
Okay. And that's not unusual as well with these licenses. They'll kind of jump from publisher to publisher as they become available.
Right.
Imagine in most cases it just completely changes gears.
So
just speaking as well of Dynamite Entertainment, is that them?
Yes.
Yeah,
they're the ones who did the Warriors comics as well.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah.
See, there's so
actually
many.
Another one as well I'll bring up. One that came in as well in about 92, and I know because I did read one of these. I never got – it was a set of four that came out, but I got one. And that was actually one based on a film you'd never think was made, which was The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Really?
Yeah. See, it was a four-parter of that.
When they realized, and it took a while, I think, for them to realize, and you know, there's when they finally realized that that you could take and do more with the books than just do a straight adaptation, that people were willing to get more out of it than just exactly what they saw on the screen. All bets were off. The things that they could get.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
could you make Andrew Dice Clay any more boorish than he is in the film? Yeah, you can in the comic book.
Right, because you can say whatever you want. I mean, there is an Army of Darkness crossover with Xena the Warrior Princess.
Yeah, definitely. That would have been the Rob Tapert.
That's really mixing up. You got movie and television.
And the one I wanted to say was The Chronicles of Riddick, introduced as a movie in Pitch Black with, what's his name? Fast and the Furious, Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel goes on to become this total entrepreneurial, you know, spirit-having guy that turns this character Riddick into a series of movies, a series of comic books, a series of video games. There are a ton of Riddick comic books out there as well.
Wow.
Now, lest we forget things like and things that we missed in the last episode was now that I'm looking at Dynamite's website, things like The Bionic Woman, Buck Rogers. You did talk about Buck Rogers in the last one. Alice in Wonderland. I don't know what came first. We're talking about literature next, aren't we?
Yes, we are. That is going to be our final literature, amongst other things.
There is one thing I do want to talk to Stu about, because we have him here. So, and we're not going to get this opportunity during this story arc again, is this. Stu, are you willing to discuss the Kiss comic books?
Sure, I've got them.
Just tell me about them. I know it's a little off topic, but this is the last we're going to have of you know, we're not going to have too many chances to talk to you, so, in this story arc.
About comic books ever again, yeah. All right, well, I don't have the originals. I'll just say that much. Okay, I do remember when they came out in 78, I think it was. There was two of them.
Okay.
There's the kiss blood inside the comic story and all that sort of crap.
Was that real, by the way?
That was real. They actually had a vial of their own blood, like a little test tube of their own blood, put into the actual red ink mixture.
Oh,
so the AIDS epidemic was around back in the 70s. I don't think that would have been happening, but obviously that was a few years later, but whatever. So there's actually their blood mixed into the ink, which is a pretty incredible idea. I think no one else ever thought of that idea before or since.
It's pretty ballsy, yeah.
Yeah. That would have been all Gene Simmons as well. He was a massive comic book reader. I think still maybe, but he was back in his younger days. I bought the reissues that came out in a mini, you know, what do they call them? Help out with that damn word.
A trade paperback?
Come on. Trade paperback. That's it. Okay. Yeah. So I've got them in that, and that came about 92. I bought it then, and I've read it. But they released a whole bunch of Kiss comics afterwards, back in the 90s, I believe, and
Psycho
through
Circus
the 2000s.
And all those.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, there was a book that came out that, gee, I wish I had grabbed. It was going for only $50 here at one of our stores, called The Kiss Compendium.
I've actually seen it at half-price books once or twice.
Oh, it's not so much a book as it is a slate for a new building property you could build on. It is massive. I think it's about 600 pages. Might be more. It is just massive. And I think it weighs about, I think it'd be about 6-7 kilos. So what's that, about 15 pounds? It is just huge. Look up on the net sometime and right. you just see the sheer size of this thing. And that was $50. I wish I had I'd picked them up, but I was just, you know, at the time, didn't do it. But that is probably the best thing to get because I believe that includes the first two comics from 78 in there as well. It's like basically every comic Kiss is released, it's in that book.
Right on, right
on. Plan to get it all in one go, get the compendium, or if you're silly enough to try and seek it all out individually, there's that option as well. It's still freely available. You know, it's not like there's any out there. The 78 ones may be hard to come by. You know, I think you start paying a few bucks, maybe around your $25, $30 for them each, but there's reissues and the compendium in there as well. So if you need to get your Kiss fix, there's that. And there's also Kiss Beer, which I just saw in the shop
last week.
I found the mother load of, I'm just doing a little research, I just popped it in and went to Dynamite's website, and 90% of Dynamite's catalog is...
Wait, stop there. Hang on, Andrew, stop there. Cole, it's not Dynamite, is it? It's, what is it?
Cole.
Dynamite!
There you go.
Thank you. You got it.
Okay, so here's Dynamite did RoboCop, so that's that. Okay. That's out there. But Dynamite did, and I was not aware of this until I just stumbled upon it, a whole kit and caboodle slew of Highlander comic books.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes just, sense.
You guys, okay, let me ask you guys this, okay? How big... I mean, obviously, my comic book knowledge is fairly limited. Even though I actually take some pictures and show a dude over some to put on your show notes. So I'm not completely devoid of any sort of knowledge. But with the sort of action film genre of the 80s especially, your RoboCops, your Highlanders, were they just targeting sort of specific ones that were hits, or just they just bungle anything onto a comic book? Or was there a balance in between?
You know...
Because I know Ford Fairlane wasn't a hit. That was a massive bomb, but they still made it a four... out of that, so that's why I ask.
They directed it. Let's put it that way. They directed it at a certain stereotype, you know, that they expected to buy comic books, and it wasn't 13-year-old girls. You know what I mean? It was obviously males between the ages of X and Y. So I can understand why they would put Ford Fairlane out, and I also understand why they put like everything, you know, every other action movie from the 80s under the sun out and, you know, and push that too.
Well, here's another one, you know, speaking of the modern version of the same, from Dynamite, The Man with No Name.
Which is awesome.
Really? The Crossword one.
They're doing apparently a series called The Man with No Name. So if you need help with that, that of course is a Fistful of Dollars.
And that's famously, you know, semi-famously what Dynamite does is they will license anything they can get their hands on, and they will put it out.
Okay, let me ask this. And Cole and Andrew, you probably most likely know, and Catherine would actually know, was there ever a comic book adaptation or a comic book series of Pulp Fiction?
Wow.
No, oddly enough, not that I'm aware of.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's wide open now, apparently.
Well, any of the Tarantino stuff, right? From now Django, Unchained, you could have comic books based on in the world of... Especially, you know, Robert Rodriguez slash... Yeah. Oh, Kill Bill lends itself like beautifully.
Glorious Bastards Follies or something.
Right. Heroes.
Yes. It'd be like Hogan's Heroes, only...
Well, they could do it when they were younger and call them Little Bastards, I suppose.
Hey. Yeah, you'd be like the Muppet Babies, little Bastards.
That's right, like the Muppet Babies, Little Bastards.
Now, there was a company called Adventure Comics several years ago that licensed Alien Nation, and I'm not sure if they were adapting more the television series mythos or the movie mythos, but I'm counting it anyway because it would have been – it started out – it was a movie before it was a television series. So that's how I'm justifying that.
It counts.
Okay,
and
what
they
about
actually went on to license Planet of the Apes, being one of the like second or third publisher ever.
I remember reading one of those as a kid. Yeah,
yeah. They even did the crossover thing. They did Ape Nation.
Did they really?
Ape Nation. It was essentially their Planet of the Apes versus Alien Nation.
Wow.
Homer Simpson would say, that awful Planet of the Apes.
Cole, I linked one for you there. You might want to take a look at it.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
That's especially for you. I found that one especially for you.
Something other than else.
What is it?
If I'm reading this correctly.
I think you are, because I think I am.
Is it?
It has to be. I mean, if you read the byline, this is great radio right here. That's what this is.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine if you will.
I think while you're looking into that, doesn't IDW have all the publishing rights to all the Romero stuff?
They might at that.
To like Night of the Living Dead and Day of the Dead and Dawn of the Dead. And
somebody did adapt, I think Dark Horse had the Jurassic Park license for a while there.
Yes, and it was IDW. IDW does have the rights to all of the Romero stuff. So there's a bunch of movies that were made into comic books and continually added to the mythos that way.
Absolutely. Another example of that, of course, somebody a few years back brought Continuing Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah.
I bought the first one, and I just couldn't quite... It just struck me as Buckaroo Banzai a name only. That's just a tough nut to crack.
It's that would be very hard to do.
I know there's a couple of comic books I see. I saw years back, and one was a Jaws one.
Nice.
So it was definitely an E.T. one as well. I know definitely it was an E.T. comic book.
I had an E.T. one. One that counts for me is the Creepshow comic books-ish, like the HBO series. And I know that you're kind of saying, okay, they're based on a comic book, but they took on a whole different life after they aired on, you know, after it was turned into a TV show, after, you know, it got turned into that anthology type TV show. It took on a whole new life in the world of comic books. So it was sort of like comic books went, allowed a TV show to be made, and then allowed a comic book to be made on the TV show, or movies, depending on, you know, what you were looking at, because Creepshow had a bunch of movies too, that then allowed them to be more successful.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, is that okay?
I'll tell you guys. Sorry, Andrew, go on.
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you one that was heavily publicized as a comic book. In fact, the guy who made the film bought a comic book store in New Jersey. Curlerks.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't deny they're from a film. It's from a film.
Yeah,
right?
I know. You're absolutely in the right to say that. Just I have a love-hate relationship with Kevin Smith.
Jeez, you as well. Take a number like everybody else.
Like, I love Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith needs to stop broadcasting Kevin Smith's life out to everyone.
I've got some bad news for Andrew, by the way.
What? No, it's not. It's not it, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, that disappoints me. You know,
our favorite property featuring the Bryans—that is Brian Dennehy and Brian Brown—FX.
So, why hasn't that been made?
I don't know.
Because nobody cares about it.
Oh, come on. That's them's dangerous ass fighting words is what you're throwing around.
Now, why hasn't Roland Raleigh Tyler's further adventures been explored with his buddy, Lieutenant Leo McCarthy?
Right. I mean, it would be great. You could do like a dark and gritty comic book based on it. Speaking of dark and gritty comic books based on movies, IDW owns the right and has published at least 3 books based on Scarface.
Yeah, right. That doesn't surprise me.
It kind of surprises me because the story's been told. You know?
I guess, you know, you could do Scarface the early years, like kind of prequel stuff, like before he really hit.
You know how we always talk about getting the sidekick's point of view, or getting the point of view of the secondary characters? Like, we could have a whole series based on what happened in that internment camp type area where they were holding them at immigration.
Oh, refugee camp.
What happens to the guy after he's been chained up in the hotel room and a chainsaw take it to him? What happened to him after that? Let's explore that. Oh my god! Yeah. So I was
why not the Donnie Brasco comic? Goodfellas.
I would have paid a lot of money for a Serpico comic book back in the day. The Underworld books were bought and made, which makes a lot of sense. The vampire versus werewolf world by IDW. IDW is just the master of taking all this. And
you know, a lot of horror stuff, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, those characters were ripe for...
Oh, yeah. Devil's Rejects, they own the rights to Devil's Rejects. But yeah, I mean, and that's... Cole touched on that, but there are so many comic book adaptations of horror movies where you get like X versus Y or Y versus Z.
Yes, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Pinhead versus Candyman.
Speaking of
Hellraiser. Oh, there you go. Good one there. The whole Hellraiser mythos.
There are. Yeah. Who owns the right to Hellraiser? Does anybody know? Top of their head?
I don't know on that one.
Because there are a butt ton of Hellraiser Hellraiser comic books out there.
Films and comics as well.
Right. Hey, the one starring Lance Hendrickson where it's all virtual and he drugs people and Hell House or something? I don't remember.
That wasn't so much a Hellraiser film, Andrew, as it was just Lance Hendrickson being Lance Hendrickson.
That's right.
Now, did Avatar get picked up by anybody? Was anybody trying to play with that one?
I don't know. Epic Comic Books owns Clive Barker's Hellraiser. And Boom, for that matter. Boom, another. You have this weird thing that happened in comic books. So we've discussed, you know, in different story arcs that, you know, you got Marvel, you got DC, and then you got this small piece of the Venn diagram that is all of these other comic book publishers. And some big, you got like Image, and you got Dark Horse, and you got these guys that take a fairly large piece of the pie. But then you've got guys like Dynamite and IDW and Boom Comic Books that take a relatively small, minute piece of that pie, and a lot of them seem like they exist for the sole purpose of buying up these licenses and putting comic books out of them. And that's nothing wrong with that, because a lot of the comic books are really cool, but a lot of them, it's just like there's some odd choices being made. I think Boom was Mark Waid's company, wasn't it?
I think IDW did Motel Hell, apparently.
Wow.
Jeez.
Wow.
that one's for Stu.
Yeah,
Rory Calhoun in a comic book. He wrote a book.
Yeah, I want to see
and
all the
Nancy
Sid
Parsons.
I want to see a Sid Haig collected edition.
Oh, there's got to be a trade paperback of just Sid Haig and all various crazy looking Sid Haig adventures.
But they've got so Boom Comics has the rights to Hellraiser. Currently has the rights to Planet of the Apes. There's just a ton of stuff.
Well, I do know one. Speaking of Dynamite, I know one that I've read, and I know Cole's definitely read, which is a one-shot. Remember what it was, Cole?
Which one?
Black Dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Black Dynamite did spawn its own spinoff comic. See, you come on here thinking, oh, I don't know anything about comics. Oh, sorry, that was a Rick voice.
Well, like
I don't
Rick
know
Cole.
Anything about comics. And then all of a sudden, you're just like on fire here. I mean, we're casting about. And you know, one that
so
just
struck on fire, I got a Bunsen burner up my ass more than on fire.
See, the problem is at this point we're not casting about. There's just so much material. Like, I just came across the 28 Days Later license that Boom owns. So there's some more Red Hot Zombie.
Think about this: 28 Days Later was a comic first. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of something else. You're right. I'm thinking of 30 Days of Night.
30 Days of Night, yes. Which, by the way, brilliant. Amazing. Steve Niles is a damn genius.
And one that I can't believe I've forgotten to mention up to this point is Indiana Jones.
Oh, yes.
Marvel had it, Dark Horse had it, and if I'm not mistaken, somebody else may have had it as well.
Indiana Jones. How many comics did they do? They didn't do straight adaptions, did they? I mean, they did.
Marvel did an adaptation of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but then they went and did a straight original.
Okay, that's
they did,
awesome.
The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, I believe it was called. John Byrne did the first two or three issues. I think it was like a two-issue arc. It was absolutely brilliant stuff. It was really cleverly written. And then immediately after he left, it went straight to hell. He was prepared. I think somebody told me he'd even gone so far as to have plotted several more issues after.
Right.
But he kept running into being stonewalled by Lucasfilm. They
shocker.
They were trying to so heavily micromanage that title that he would submit the scripts and then he would get these notes back asking for ridiculous things. And it'd be like, okay, that would be like, you know, when Andy is talking about the Holy Grail and saying something about, you know, didn't you go to Sunday school, have some kind of flashback scene of Indian Sunday school. You wouldn't do that in a film. You don't need to do that in a comic.
Right, absolutely. So it kind
so
of...
He just, He just threw his hands up and left, and what followed was utter crap.
And then it burnt into obscurity, which is a shame, because that license is rife for amazing... Because you can take it to... Here's the thing they won't let you do in the movie, but you could take it to the fantastic in a comic book the way they would never let you do in a movie.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see.
I've got one here for you, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah.
One, our buddy Jean-Claude. One of his films was turned into a comic book as well.
Oh, no. Which
Universal
one?
Soldier.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yes, it was. I had it. I had a couple issues of it. It was a lot darker than the movie. And the movie was pretty dark, but I guess I just didn't remember it. I was fairly young when the movie came out, you know? So I didn't remember it being as dark. But I guess when you're reading it as a comic book, you really pick up on the darkness. You know, that kind of thing. So I didn't buy a lot of them because of that fact. Because I was like, this is just really dark and I don't like it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They did make that into a... did they make a... Now, I realize we're dancing in a circle here. But did they make a comic book based on the Masters of the Universe movie?
I don't think anything was ever done based on the movie.
Not the movie, no. I know there was definitely the cartoon
series.
Though,
oddly enough, iconography from the movie and even that barbecue sauce guzzling...
Freak.
Gwildor.
Yes.
Gwildor.
Crossed over into the toys.
Yes, they did. Yes.
In fact, very recently, Mattel has continued to, you know, build on the Masters of the Universe, especially through Maddie Collector. And one of their recent releases, some character that they'd created that didn't exist back in the day, I'm sure, came with that stupid musical instrument.
crystal piece of crap.
Yeah, that the thing with all the forks.
Yes.
The Swiss Army organ.
One that we missed, and I am remiss if I wouldn't mention it, because it was widely heralded as excellent, was the Die Hard Year One comic book. And I forgot that Boom Studio did that, and it was Howard Chaykin was the writer. And apparently everybody really liked it, though it begs the question, if the first year of John McClane's life was that hard ass, why wasn't he like a member of like the Secret Service, or, you know, why was he still a beat cop out of New York?
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody pick him up?
He was ambitionless.
That's true. He really was kind of the Spicoli of cops.
You know, maybe after the divorce, he just hit the skids and
just, yeah.
He didn't really care anymore. Why bother?
He just found himself in these fantastic situations. And
every time they tried to promote, he said, no, it's okay. I'll be a beat cop.
But that's the problem, is we've had the same problem with this episode as we've had, or this issue as we had with many other ones, where we're like, I don't know what we're going to talk about. And all of a sudden there's this just... vast
there's no shortage
chasm full of things to talk about. So I do want to end it with this, because we are coming up against it right before we do final thoughts. Stu, is there a movie that you would say I will go to a comic shop and buy the comic of if they were to adapt it into a universe based on that movie that you can think of? Okay, what do you got?
Yes, Andy Sidaris's Guns.
I think they do it. It's called Danger Girl.
Nice. God. No, actually, I would actually, if they did a series based on, and I'm very honest here, if they did a series based on every damn Uwe Boll film,
right,
I would. Or if they had a pool boy comic, that would be
that would be hilarious. Like,
there's no end of things you could do with St. James Street James. I mean, really.
But the Uwe Boll stuff, some of that stuff is comics.
But Blubberella comics? You could do that easily.
Yeah. But I mean, like, in the Name of the King, I think there is a comic book because it was a video game first. I'm trying to think of...
Yes, I thought, doesn't he do video game adaptations more than comic books?
A lot of video game adaptations.
I know.
Blood Rain, In the Name of the King... Far Cry. Didn't he do a Far Cry with what's that Russian dude? Yeah. Oh, poor Uwe Boll. He needs to be recognized. I long for the day when they call his name at the Oscars. Not for an Oscar, but for a lifetime achievement award after he's died. That's what I long for.
He doesn't need it. He's already got his Oscar, Andrew. It's from us.
It's from
us. He's already got it.
So what about you, Cole? Is there anything that isn't out there that if they made it into a comic book, you would buy it?
Wow, that's a good. You know, I think, and this is one we didn't talk about, but King Kong was actually...
Yeah.
The classic King Kong.
Not the Peter Jackson King Kong.
Into a comic. I would like to see something like that where you take a classic character and, you know, explore further with it. Similar right. like old horror movies, your old sci-fi stuff. Unfortunately, no specific spring to mind moment. But
Well, that's okay. I think for me, and this is going to sound really weird, but I really want you to think about it because I was thinking about this earlier today. I think for me, I would really buy the hell out of a book that was based in the world of Blazing Saddles.
Oh, now that could be fun. Or is anything Mel Brooks.
Anything
except Life Stinks.
Right.
If they could keep the level of humor that was throughout that film, throughout the series of comic books, it could be a good read.
It could, sure. Or an illustrated history of the world, you know, where it's like an encyclopedia type thing, you know, but it's all drawn, but it's the same humor.
Yeah, well, they could just jump all over the globe and over history, just like in the movie.
Right.
Well, yeah, let's just hope it's funnier than the movie, because that was not funny at all.
Oh, are you kidding? Who are you?
No.
Well, you're entitled, I suppose.
I don't know if you
should. I suppose you're entitled to your Australian opinion. And I will blame it on your Australian opinion. how dare you?
Hey.
What about Blazing Saddles? Are
well,
you okay?
I'll tell you why I like it, Andrew. I'll tell you why I didn't like it. Because Australia wasn't included. So what the hell am I going to care about everybody else?
Here we go. All right. I'll write Mel Brooks.
So are they going to have like coverage of some sort of humorous take on Ned Kelly or something?
Why not? They made a film with Mick Jagger like that.
Yeah. And sadly, that's the...
Hey, let's not bring Free Jack into this.
Personal
right.
Australian history knowledge off the top of my head.
Yeah.
All right. So, final thoughts. We're up against it again. This is the end. We've muddled and fought our way through another exciting adventure together. So, final thoughts.
Cole. Yeah, Cole. What about a comic based on The Highwayman? I know it was a TV show.
You mean The Highwayman? You mean...
With Jacko.
Oh, that Highwayman. All right. What about a Jacko? Is there a Jacko comic book?
No.
How about a comic series based on Master and Commander?
Oh, my God.
Why would they?
That would be the longest. The first issue would be 7 issues long.
Hold on. Hold on. Cole, was there ever a comic based on Blade Runner?
Yes. Oh, yes.
There was an adaptation, but I don't think that the character was ever taken in any other directions.
I was holding on to that one for the literature one, because there are comic books based on a lot of Philip K. Dick stuff and like Ellison and Asimov and all of that. Those fields have been reaped. My friend.
So I think really the important thing here is to point out that there's been a 40-year plus history of this.
Oh, yeah. This is not new.
And it's really amazing to see that it just not only perpetuates, but it's just going gangbusters these days.
Well, you've got to figure. Before, if you were going to buy a license and you were going to turn it into a comic book, the license had to be viable. So you had to know that it was going to be a Star Wars or an Indiana Jones or an E.T. or a Godzilla or a King Kong or apparently a Ford Fairlane. I think maybe the Ford Fairlane was the beginning of the end.
That ended the first age of...
Right. And then you started seeing these people that go... Or the comic book companies that go, hey, wait a second, if we buy the rights to this, we can do whatever we want to with it. You know, it's your $20. Leave it on the counter as you leave, type of situation. So you started seeing all these horrible things. But in the beginning, it was really a time honored tradition to take these things and convert them into a licensed comic book.
Absolutely. I want to point out that in my research, I did stumble on something really remarkable.
What's that?
It was the Gold Key adaptation of Walt Disney's The Moonspinners.
Wow.
Was there a
prior to discovering that adaptation, I didn't know Walt Disney ever had a movie called The Moonspinners.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
That's the sole reason that's notable.
Oh, by the way, there was a Metropolis comic book.
Very good.
One of possibly the oldest comic, you know, licensed materials to be turned into a comic book. I'm sorry, Stu, what were you saying?
Back to the Future? Was there a comic book on that?
It's a good question. And I think the answer is yes, but I'm not absolutely sure. We should
It was at the right time in the mid-80s. It was right for a comic book.
And keep in mind,
Ford Fairlane may have blocked that.
It's cock-blocked by Andrew Dice Clay. Keep in mind that a lot of the things that you think are the 80s and are rife for it are. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that stuff got picked up later in the 2000s, too. Like Ghostbusters.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
But Ghostbusters has found a totally new life in comic books that it didn't have.
And also, before Rick or anybody else complains about the complete and total lack of coverage of the any Disney movie titles, any Disney feature films, Disney is pretty much a given because right. Disney owned its own publishing houses for most of the time. That stuff was just churned out ad nauseum.
And I think what Cole's trying to say is that we don't want to talk about Disney.
Why do we want to talk about Disney? We don't want to talk about Disney. You're absolutely right. Yes, I did find a Back to the Future comic book in the weirdest twist of fate, done by Harvey Comics.
Harvey.
All right, guys, let's wrap this one up. There are a lot of, again, a lot of licensed comic books out there and a lot of missed opportunities, I think, that we found that people could have...
The Exorcist. They didn't do well in The Exorcist. That was a missed one.
That would be brilliant. You had to wait until the very last minute. Stu, why don't you get your plugs in there?
Oh, let me get them out. Hold on. All right. Let me get the plugs in. Okay. Okay. MidnightMovieCowboys.com. We are there. So myself, John, and the turd, Hunter.
The turd.
The turd. As they say in France. I mean the third, actually. Sorry.
The third. As they say in France.
MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com for the email. Facebook, Twitter, we're all there.
Nice.
And that's basically it. And I turn up with these jokers every so often. It's like, you know.
You do indeed.
We're all like a spoon. We're going to get, you know, melted, liquefied into a spoon and just inject each other with something. Oh, no, it's okay.
We're the heroine of podcasts. Is that what you're trying to say? We're some homogenous group of action figures, like the G.I. Joes where you can make your own. You just plug in, plug and play. Cole, what do you got? There's a lot coming up.
Well, of course, as you know, you're listening to this courtesy of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can follow us occasionally on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. And if you really want to get into some really cool stuff, we now have the spinoff site of this site. If you're living in Texas or care to want to know what's going on in the convention scene in Texas, we have the Convention Awareness Project Texas, or CAP Texas, brand new spinoff site.
Cole,
covering all things conventions in the state of Texas.
Cole, shut up. You say it now. Captain Texas.
Captain Texas for Stu.
That is Cole's nickname, Captain Texas.
tx.blogspot.com. Check it out. We maintain the most comprehensive list of all conventions in the state of Texas, and it just keeps getting bigger every time I think I'm done.
Man, I've had a nickel getting for every time I've heard that. All right. And also, huge, gigantic Jedi Cole Universe presence at AllCon coming up just about a month away now.
But you'll be able to meet my esteemed co-host, the founder of Hey Kids Comics, Andrew Farmer, will be there.
Right. I will be there. I'll be doing all kinds of things. I'll be there.
We're
going to have a shawarma night. If you come to my live event, we're going to teach you how to crochet. It's going to be lovely. Yeah. We're going to teach you
Also, with Andrew, if you take along a leg of pork and a couple of slices of bread, he'll do another trick for you.
I will. I'm also going to teach you how to muddle the perfect mojito. It'll be nice.
And we're going to have the big, was it noon on Saturday, the big goose roundup?
The big goose roundup, yes. As I like to call it, the pate for the fate. It's going to be great. I don't know what that means. I'm scared alone right now. So yeah, huge goings-ons there.
I'll tell you one thing you guys won't be doing. Everybody, these guys will be doing everything but sleeping.
Oh, yeah. You know, I will say this for Cole, though. This year, Cole has managed to actually set aside time for everybody to eat and sleep. I really appreciate that. As long as the yard arm doesn't break or we have to re-rig the sail, everybody will be able to sleep and we'll be able to actually sit down and eat some food. And so I also got to throw a plug out to, United States of Geekdom, our sisterish site.
Yeah.
We've got a show coming up in a couple days on the softer side of Swayze. So that should be fun. Other than that, I'm going to close this out.
Wait, you stop right now.
What's that now?
If you're talking the softer side of Swayze, damn you, man, you better talk about Skate Town USA.
We could. It wasn't on the list.
It
wasn't on the list.
Watch it! It's awesome.
Okay. I think we touched a nerve. I think we touched a nerve. All right.
I think I shed a nerve.
So thank you, Stu, for joining us tonight and lending some movie credibility and not being too offensive. I do appreciate that. Well, I promise we'll have you back on an X-rated episode. You can let your Australian Tourette's fly. So
that's when we're doing commentary for Guns. That's when I'll do it.
Oh my God, I cannot wait for that. All right. So as always, if you like your movies in four color and on paper, you should buy, collect, and enjoy the 2001 Space Odyssey adaptation, and just comic books in general. So
And enjoy them digitally as well.
Stu's here. Enjoy them digitally. No matter how you can get them, enjoy them.
Absolutely. That's the important thing.
That's right. So join us next time when we're hopefully going to have our episode on toys to comic book licenses. Thank you guys so much. This has been an amazing run, and stay tuned. It only gets better from here, ladies and gentlemen.